Chapter 12. The Song, the Sin, and the Church. Sunday, the 2nd of June, 1191. Storm clouds were gathering on the morning that the Sheriff of Nottingham rode his chestnut mare into the royal encampment. It offended the man's every sense. The garish colours, the minstrels bleating, the smell of wasted, rotting food left over from last night's feast. The sheriff's eyes scanned the flags adorning the colourful tents. Upon seeing the royal standard, he turned his horse and made his way through the makeshift alleys. The prince was sitting at a small desk, quill in hand, writing in a peculiar black tome. When the sheriff walked in, John snapped the book shut quickly, jumping up to embrace the new arrival like an old friend. The sheriff took His Highness in. The prince was in all his usual finery, his brother's crown resting on his head, but beneath the crown, the hair was unkempt. Beneath that, the eyes were red, and beneath them, large dark rings had formed. The prince was not sleeping. "Welcome, welcome," exclaimed John, stepping back from the embrace. "Oh, this is splendid. I wasn't expecting you till this afternoon. You've made excellent time." "Well, one must move at a pace through the forest these days," the sheriff replied. "Yes, I've heard about your little problem." The prince looked amused, much to the sheriff's annoyance. His reward posters had rather backfired. Instead of resulting in a quick arrest, the tale of Robin Hood was spreading rather too rapidly for his liking, and now he needed to kill it fast. "I wouldn't call it a problem. Temporary inconvenience," said the sheriff coldly. "Good. Walk with me." John left his pavilion, and the sheriff fell into step by his side. It was an unseasonably chilly morning, and the dew still hung heavy on the long grass as the two men made their way through the camp. Every cook, every soldier, every man dipped their heads in deference to John as they passed by. How easy life must be as a royal. Everyone bowing and scraping to you just because you were born in the right bed, the sheriff ruminated. "I suppose you're wondering the reason for the late night summons," John asked, waving to a handful of delighted subjects.
"Well, yes, Your Majesty. Considering that you are on your way to Nottingham, I must say I'm curious as to what is so urgent. Not that I don't relish your royal company," the sheriff added quickly.
"I need you to take something to the city ahead of me," said the prince. "It caused too many questions in London and is unfortunately beginning to do the same here, especially with last night's screaming." The sheriff shot him a quizzical look. They had arrived at a tent set away from the others. There was a smell coming from it. The sheriff had experienced that odour once before, as a boy, when plague had hit his village. Back then it had not been safe to bury the bodies. It was the smell of burning flesh. The prince put an arm around him and squeezed one of his shoulders. "I have always counted on you as a man of skill and discretion," the prince said as they entered the tent. "Let's put both qualities to the test." Young Will and Little John held court in the forest that night. Every one of their band had returned safely from a productive day of redistributing wealth. They were gathered around a fire, food and ale both flowing freely.
"And he cries, 'I couldn't possibly part with this ring. It was a gift from Mother,'" said John, doing his best impression of a particularly pompous nobleman.
"And I put me hand up real slow."
Will took up the tale, raising his maimed hand and pulling a grotesque face. He squinted one eye while making the other pop comically.
"I'll look him dead in the eye and say, 'Be careful, sir, or we'll take finger too.'"
I could do with another.
The men laughed, and Will looked happily at his attentive audience. He spotted Adam towards the back. He was smiling while nursing a drink, but Will could see his mind was elsewhere.
And then he shat himself, finished John.
The men roared with laughter, the two storytellers receiving pats on the back for a tale well told. Will saw Adam take this opportunity to get up from the fire and walk a little way into the darkness of the woods.
There must be a song. The Ballad of Robin Hood and Brown Breeches,
John bellowed, helping himself to another cup of ale. Will broke away from the men and followed Adam out of the firelight.
Looks like it's going to rain, Will said, announcing himself.
You're right. Adam attempted a smile. Yes, fine. I just need a piss, too much ale.
Oh, I'll join you.
Will didn't know why, but he had a sense that his friend shouldn't spend too much time in his own head tonight. He sidled up beside Adam. They both looked forward into the darkness of the forest.
I didn't think it would take this long, said Adam with a hint of frustration.
Don't worry, we all get shy sometimes.
Not the piss, laughed Adam, the search.
I know, but...
Will's brow furrowed as both men did themselves up. What happens when we do find her? He turned to Adam, trying to read his face. Will had always been good at reading people, but those grey eyes gave little away.
I've spent so long looking, Adam began,
but he trailed off. He seemed unsure.
I hope you stay, sir, with me.
With us.
Will looked down at the floor, embarrassed by his own sincerity. He'd learnt early on that vulnerability left you open to attack. To his relief, Adam hadn't noticed. He was too busy stargazing between branches, his mind worlds away.
I don't know what happens next, Will. We just have to find her.
The small church of St. Michael's had never been a grand place. Plain wooden pews, a simple altar, a few candles, nothing extravagant. That afternoon, rain fell hard on the roof, turning the stone building into an echoing drum. The church's only occupant, Friar Robert Tuck, turned his gaze to the heavens. This was not for any divine purpose, but rather to wonder where the leak would come from this time. He hoisted his large frame up from the front row, straightened out his simple monk's trappings, and turned to walk down the aisle between the pews. Once, as a soldier, he had had a crisis of faith. He'd seen the cruelty and violence that lived inside the souls of even the most pious of men, and God had seemed far away indeed. He didn't seem much closer today. The friar reached the back of the church and turned to face the altar, dropping to his knees.
Father above, hear my prayer. I do all I can for poor of my parish, but I fear they may be losing hope. This is God's country. Our king fights for the holy land, so why do it feel as if we're suffering as a nation of Job's? I buried a child today, the third from the Edge family. Many souls get taken young, but these could have been saved with a few loaves of bread and the heat of a good fire. It all seems so unnecessary. The mother asked me why you would do this. I didn't have an answer. I don't know how many more tests I can face.
As soon as the friar's gaze fell from the altar, there was a smart knock on the church doors. Tuck made his way towards the front of the church, wondering which poor soul had been caught out in this tempest. His church was cold and not that comfortable, but it was at least dry, for now. He opened the doors. He was met by a hooded figure, smiling and dripping wet. A basic cart pulled by a donkey was parked behind him, its only cargo a large wooden box.
Evening, Tuck. Good news. I have some of God's work for you to do, said the Sheriff of Nottingham. The friar had met this unnerving man on a number of occasions, none of which had been pleasurable. But the sheriff had always insisted that he be the one to administer church donations to the poor, and Tuck was uncertain how much of that coin actually reached them. He'd considered challenging him over the matter on a number of occasions, but he'd performed the last rites for enough bread thieves and game poachers to know that any direct challenge to this man could be a death sentence.
Good evening, Sheriff. To what do I owe this unexpected pleasure?
Hood up, good man. I have something to show you in the back of my cart. The sheriff began walking towards the wagon. The friar closed the heavy doors to his church and reluctantly followed, pulling up his rough-spun hood. It did little to keep out the cold of the rain.
Times are tough, Tuck. I'm sure the church isn't getting the tithes it's used to. It's been hard, Sheriff, particularly with the increase in taxes.
The sheriff smiled at him thinly. The slight jibe had not gone unnoticed.
I'm sure. I have just spoken with our good Prince John, a God-fearing man if ever there was one. He wishes to help the church in these trying times and, in turn, help the poor.
The rain was so heavy the sheriff was obliged to shout what he would rather have whispered.
It is my task to find out who in my area is worthy of such royal benevolence, the sheriff continued. But I need to make sure I pick the right people. People who will always do the right thing.
The sheriff punctuated the last sentence with a sharp rap on the cart's wooden crate. The monk thought quickly. He didn't know what the sheriff wanted, but whatever it was, his refusal could mean irons or death. He couldn't help anyone when dead. He looked back at the church. The prince was a wealthy man. With his support, he wouldn't have to be so worried about the roof on days like this. He could make sure that the Hedge family was safe and secure, never to lose a little one again so needlessly.
What do I have to do? Oh, just go on a little trip to the centre of Nottingham and deliver this to the castle.
The sheriff smiled gently, pleased to have landed his catch.
Through the forest? But the outlaws, Tuck began, have only attacked the noble and wealthy, which is why I'm talking to you.
The sheriff took a quick step forward, bringing his hound-like face within inches of the holy man's. The two men stared at each other in silence as the rain continued to fall. Neither one moved. Tuck didn't trust the sheriff's motives, but he knew he had little choice. He nodded.
Good man, said the sheriff.
Pulling off a glove, he put finger and thumb to his mouth and whistled loudly. An armoured man on horseback appeared out of the rain, leading a riderless chestnut mare behind him. The sheriff swung himself into its saddle and looked down at the now sodden monk.
I'll see you in a day or two. Leave immediately, please. No time for delay.
What is it?
Asked Tuck, gesturing towards the large wooden box. But he had asked too late. The sheriff and his man were already galloping back into the storm. The friar, resigned to his fate, pulled himself up onto the front of the cart, gave the reins a little flick, and followed in their wake, towards the forest and the city of Nottingham.
You've been listening to Evergreen, Chapter 12, written by Sam Russell and read by Catherine Russell. If you enjoyed this chapter, wherever you're listening, please subscribe, give us a rating and a review so we can get this story into more people's ears. And if you really enjoyed it and want to support this project, you can do so on our Ko-fi page. All details available on our Twitter, at Evergreen Book 1. The next chapter comes out on November the 15th. Thanks for listening.